The following podcast contains strong language and frank conversations about topics that some listeners may find upsetting.
Specifically for me, maybe over the past like 8-10 years, in terms of attitudes, I would say have definitely changed in terms of I'm seeing more young people tell others about their HIV and have positive responses than before, where I think a lot more young people were like, no, I'm never, ever going to tell anyone, and perhaps didn't tell anyone until much older. But I'm definitely seeing a shift in younger people telling their friends about their HIV.
Welcome to Positive Advice, the podcast by Chiva, which puts young people at the centre of the conversation when it comes to HIV. I'm Eli Fitzgerald, your host, and in this episode, we are focusing on relationships, both with our friends and with our romantic partners, and how living with HIV shapes and affects those relationships. Each episode, I am joined not only by Chiva's CEO, Amanda Ely. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Eli.
But also by a professional working in the HIV world, or someone connected to Chiva as a charity. And today that honour falls on Matilda Brown, who is a specialist project support officer with many years' experience in direct support working with young people growing up with HIV. Hi, Matilda.
Hi, Eli.
Could you possibly tell us a little bit about your involvement with Chiva?
Yeah, so I've been really lucky to work with Chiva for quite a number of years now. But most recently, as you mentioned, I'm the specialist project support officer. And that basically involves me working with clinics across London that look after the sort of healthcare needs of young children, young adults, and young people living with HIV. But my role is to sort of provide the emotional, psychosocial support that goes along with the healthcare needs. That might be in the clinic setting, but also we do group support, organise peer meetups. Yeah, so it's quite a nice, varied role. Actually, I'm quite lucky.
That sounds really nice. And today we're sort of talking a bit about relationships and friendships. Would you consider yourself a relationship guru?
Not at all. Not at all. I think I'm quite lucky in the sense that across all of my work, I think relationships are something that comes up constantly. So when I'm working with mainly young people and young adults living with HIV, or growing up with HIV, one of the things that comes up constantly is this idea of relationships and friendships. Even in our peer meetup groups, It's something that always comes up as an organic topic. So I guess I've had a lot of experience in sort of supporting young people through that era of life. But yeah, I think that's as far as it goes.
Amazing. So Amanda, I was wondering just how often relationships do come up in conversations you've had with young people whilst working at Chiva.
I think, as Matilda mentioned, you know, relationships are a really strong recurring theme across all of our work programmes, really. The key issue is really, you know, young people trying to find ways in which they can kind of feel comfortable about their HIV in different relationships, be it friendships, be it, you know, sexual relationships, etc. Because of the whole challenge of who you feel you can tell about your HIV, how you can trust someone, and the worries that young people might have about, you know, once you've shared that information, you can't take it back, and it's then in some ways out of your control, and that can spiral a little bit for some young people anyway, you know, the extent to which they can feel really worried about that kind of tension between wanting to open up, wanting to be able to share something in your life. It's quite a big thing that you might feel you want to share, but how to do that and how to feel comfortable doing that. It's a really key issue. Because it's where you get your support, isn't it? Your relationships are where you get your support, and they're really important.
It's quite a big step to open yourself up to someone like that, especially at a young age where HIV isn't something that necessarily is even mentioned, but most people know it's not good in that sort of stigmatizing sense. Regular listeners will know that in each episode, we take the time to listen to some clips gathered from the amazing oral history project, Positively Spoken, and see what we can learn from these first-hand accounts from young people living with HIV from all over the world. In this first clip, we will hear from Portia, who shares this story about her love life.
So, my first relationship that I ever had ended up being with a girl, with a woman. She like kind of started opening up to me because she was a lesbian, and she shared that with me. So we kind of like had secrets we were keeping together. And then I don't know how it progressed to us dating, but it did. And then we broke up, and she got mad at me, and she spread my business around the school, and that was crazy. I mean, some people stopped hanging out with me, and then others, it brought us closer. So, like, I guess even though, like, I feel like that was a very traumatic experience, like, having your status outed like that, and it spread it around the whole school. And that's something that was consistent throughout my adolescent years, like high school, college. I had, like, friends or fake friends that would use my status against me, or, like, they would tell my status, like, I don't know, if because they didn't have anything better in their lives to talk about, or, like, to hate on me or whatever. I don't know.
In that clip, we heard from Portia and how Portia had had her sort of trust broken by someone sharing that she was living with HIV without her consent. And Matilda, I'm going to ask you, what advice would you give to someone going through this?
Yeah, it was really interesting to hear that clip, actually, because I think that's not the first time. It's not the first time I've heard that happen, which is really, really sad that, you know, you get to a point where you do trust someone enough to tell them. And then I think in Portia's particular circumstance where the relationship is broken down and that person still has that information about them, it can be really discouraging to hear that they've then shared that. When this has happened before, one of the things we've sort of said is, if we rewind a bit in terms of, I guess, when you're telling someone, because I think a lot of the times when I've started working with young people who want to tell some, we look at how you might build that up, because I think one of the really difficult things can be in that build up to telling someone first. So actually establishing that trust, I guess, thinking about what is it you're hoping to get from telling them, which a lot of people, that is, you know, someone to share. It's quite a big part of your life that you want to share with someone. So having that chance to sort of confide in someone about that. And I guess then, so when you do tell someone, it's setting the boundaries about, you're telling someone in confidence because you trust them and you're at a place in your relationship or your friendship where it's a big thing that you're telling them. And I think it's getting them to understand that these are the boundaries of what I'm telling you. And should whatever happen between our friendship or, you know, relationship or sexual relationship, I would hope that you'd be able to keep this with yourself. And I think for us, it's also about empowering the young person to feel confident in what they're saying and having all the information. Because I think sometimes the fear that that person then goes and tells so-and-so and so-and-so, it's because sometimes I don't fully understand it, and I feel that sometimes fear comes from a misunderstanding. So if someone's going to then tell someone, oh, so-and-so's got HIV, and it's, if we go back to many years ago, and people thought, oh, and you're going to catch it from kissing or sharing cups, that isn't the case at all. Never has been, but that isn't the case. So when people know the facts, the information, it gives less weight to this idea of them then telling someone else this thing, because actually it's now an understood thing that has less negative weight that they can then spread around, if that makes sense.
It's that sort of knowledge is power, and ensuring,
yeah,
the other person,
exactly,
is empowered enough to know that HIV isn't this big thing, but also if someone trusts you, you shouldn't go around spreading what is said regardless of what it is.
Exactly, yeah. And I guess it's in the same way with anything else. Like, if your friend tells you anything, you know, if you're dating someone new, and you say, actually, do you mind not keep telling everyone for a while?
Mm.
You'd hope that your friend could hold that and trust that for a while.
Yeah.
So yes, it's making sure that you're feeling secure in those foundations as well.
Amazing. I'm going to ask Amanda the same question. What advice would you have to someone going through what Portia's been through?
They need to be reassured that, you know what, this time it was crap and I'm really sorry,
yeah,
that happened to you, and acknowledging that it's crap and it's hard and not dismissing it. But also saying it doesn't mean that next time it will be. It doesn't mean that the next time you decide you want to share this information that you won't have a good response, a supportive response. And helping people feel resilient to kind of not say, well, that's it, I'm never telling anyone again because this was awful. Because that, you know, potentially wouldn't be what would make them happy in the long run, you know. So it's kind of, yeah, being there sometimes to pick up the pieces.
Mm. So I was sort of wondering, as you've both worked with young people living with HIV for a while, have you sort of over that time picked up any tips on advice you would give young people who are frightened to tell, you know, a friend or a partner that they're living with HIV?
So one of the things I always say is not to advertise myself or my job role. That's one of the things that I do in terms of one-to-one support. So I get a lot of young people who might be referred because they actually want to tell someone about their own HIV, or not just that reason, but there might be, there's usually a whole heap of like complex reasons, but that might be one of the things that they want to build up to. But I find that actually them speaking to someone who can support them on the emotional side, but also, as Amanda was saying, just when you know the facts about your own HIV. So I've had young people referred who weren't fully aware or knowledgeable about you equals you. So this idea of if you're taking your HIV and medication at the right time and in the right way and the right dose, then you cannot pass HIV on. Mm-hmm. And I guess having that information when you're going to tell someone in a, let's say you give an example as a sexual relationship, is really empowering. And I've seen that information alone be really positive to a young person's think, okay, well, that's one of my fears gone in terms of what I'm going to say or how I'm going to say it. And I've been in situations where we've role played what someone might say. I've also had situations where a young person or young adult has brought in their partner and together we've sort of spoken about that. But a lot of it, I guess, the advice is sort of understanding what you want to say, being a bit more knowledgeable on the facts, I guess. Yeah. Because I think one thing that can happen when you do tell someone is that they might have questions. And I guess having a baseline knowledge of those answers might be helpful. And if not, being able to say, do you know what? Next time I'm going to clinic next Wednesday, do you want to come along with me and my doctor can answer that question? Because I don't know the answer right now,
yeah,
but I know someone that does. And we always say, please tell them, do not Google, because Google is still, it God knows what you'll find on Google. It can, yeah. So I always say when you do tell someone, maybe just say, I would really appreciate it if you could, you know, not go on Google. And here are some really helpful websites,
yeah,
where you'll find factual information. Because, of course, that person might think, oh, okay, I don't have any questions now. But when they go home, the last thing you want them Googling is this person going to die. And then there might be, you know, some very outdated, non-factual information that might say that, because we know that's not the case. So it's like sending people to the right websites.
Adding on to what Matilda covered, I think the planning side is key. You know, why do you want to tell this person? How do you know you can trust them? And one of the things I've heard people talk about before is kind of almost testing the water a little bit. So telling them something else about your life that's personal and important, but maybe not as significant to you, sort of testing the waters and thinking, well, if I tell them this thing about me and see how they respond and see whether they do what I've asked, which is keep my confidence,
yeah,
it gives me an indication if I can trust them with something even more important. Another thing is to sort of think about whether this person's ever also trusted you. Is this a relationship that is reciprocal in that respect?
Yeah.
So you're kind of almost measuring the strength of this relationship. And in doing so, you might think, well, how important is it to me that I share this information or not? And I think also a bit of honest preparation for the outcomes, because we can't ever for sure know how things will go. And it's kind of like Matilda was saying, the role-playing situation, but it's kind of like, okay, if this happens, what do you think you're going to do? Yeah. How do you think you're going to feel? Who's going to be there for you? And then possibly exploring the positive and the potential for negative outcomes.
It's definitely a big thing. Like, even I now, when I still tell people and when I told my partner, I cried.
Right.
And I'm like, I know all the facts.
Yeah.
I'm well equipped. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I was still sobbing.
Right.
Like, and their response was just simply, okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was offended that there were no questions, because I'm mentally prepared. But yeah.
Yeah. You know, I guess it links to this sort of this context where if HIV has been something you have been told repeatedly to not talk about, to not share, you've spent half your childhood not even knowing that you've got HIV and you've been going to your medical appointments, taking your medicine without that information. Then you're told somewhere in mid-childhood at some point, and you're trying to still piece the information together yourself. We might actually be talking about a relatively short period of time from then, from you knowing yourself,
yeah,
and then you thinking about telling someone, be it a close friend or an intimate relationship. It's a lot of processing to do in a very short period of time, and, you know, it's not straightforward.
Another respondent, Agnes, said that she'd felt pressure to form relationships with and marry others who were also living with HIV. Is this something both of you sort of see or hear about?
I always say to people, if you're specifically going to look for another young adult that's living with HIV, the pool's going to be small. Mm. And then you've got to find someone in that pool that has the same interests as you. And then you've got to find, oh, actually, we should have gone first. So they also have to be single, if that's what you're looking for. So you've now reduced your chances of a wonderful relationship with someone to quite a small pool, mainly based on fear in terms of, or thinking that that's your only option. So that's generally my opening line, because I'm like, there's bigger ponds, there's lakes, there's seas, in fact, of people. So don't reduce your options.
We're talking about relationships in all their forms today. So let's now look at a platonic friendship. Here's Portia again sharing this story about her childhood.
From what I can remember, my schooling was okay. I know my mom, my aunt, I call her mom. She didn't let, like, I didn't get to go, like, to sleepovers and stuff like that. Like I had a best friend named Randy in elementary school. She was my best friend from kindergarten all the way to the sixth grade. And so I wouldn't be able to go over and spend the night at her house when they would have, like, sleepovers. Eventually, once I got a little bit older, she opened up. My aunt opened up, and Randy's mom was the only one she trusted to allow me to go over to her house, and she told her my status, and she was cool. Like, Randy's mom didn't, like, judge me or anything, and because she didn't let me go to different parties or spend the night or different sleepovers because she didn't want to have to disclose my status to, like, the other parents, and I needed to take a lot of medication. I took medication in the morning and at night, and a lot of pills. So she would have had to, like, tell them that so that they can give me my medication. And she didn't want to do that because she didn't want me to be stigmatized or judged. So, I mean, at school, everything was good, but I just remember not being able to do, like, a lot of the stuff or participate in a lot of the things that, like, the other kids got to because she was trying to protect me. From not having to disclose even to, like, the teachers and stuff at school. So, like, even some field trips and stuff I didn't get to go on, you know. So, and then I do remember one time distinctly, I had to wear a heart monitor because I had issues with, like, my heart being enlarged. And I remember having to wear, like, this heart monitor to school. But when I was sick, I was out of school, so, and then when I was well, I was able to go to school. I don't think, like, none of the kids knew, and even if they did, so I remember telling my friend Randy that I had HIV, but we both didn't know what that meant. I was in elementary school, so, and I remember when I told her, I was like, yeah, I have HIV. I didn't even know what I was talking about, and she was like, oh, okay, like, we both didn't know. The cooties was more like something that was disgusting to us when we were in elementary, more than AIDS or HIV, because we didn't know what it meant, you know?
Portia's story is all about trust, whether that's her mother's trust in Randy's mum or Portia's trust in Randy. How do you establish who you can trust, or any tips you have for sort of young people who sort of want to establish that trust and break that boundary?
From my experience and from the projects we run, particularly residential projects where we've got young people, say, a camp for a week or something, this can be something that young people find really, I mean, I use the word terrifying, and that's not to be dramatic about it, but, you know, you could sit in a workshop with 20 young people and every single one of them might say, there is no way I am ever telling anybody about my HIV. I mean, you've heard that, right?
Yeah.
Young people will say, absolutely, no way. I'm not telling anyone ever. And you kind of think, wow, you know, you're 15 and you already feel like this part of your life, this quite a big part of your life, perhaps part of your identity, if you see it in that way, because it's something you've always lived with. It's something you don't feel you could ever share. And I feel that's a big burden on a 15-year-old's shoulders to carry. And I think our job is to help them feel lighter.
I guess because there are now so many young people, young adults who have grown up with HIV,
And I think at our last meetup, you know, a very similar situation happened, what you've just mentioned, that happened at camp in terms of someone saying, I'm never telling anyone about my HIV. This happened recently at one of our, you know, group days. And having an older person who's grown up with HIV talk about their experience and how actually in that situation it was a positive experience and what then came out of it was really, really helpful for the group. Yeah. So I think also hearing an older group's perspective, or people, even doesn't even someone that's older, someone that's had those experiences of telling someone, makes such a difference. And I guess goes, you know, you start to feel less alone. People are telling other people, and actually what are the benefits of telling someone, and how, you know, what are the situations where it does go really well? And that was a really, really positive, you know, discussion that ended up being, because they were able to sort of talk to that older person and get really helpful tips. So it helps when there's someone, a practical experience people can actually listen to and feel quite inspired by, I guess.
So we're now going to hear from Joshua, who's going to talk a bit more about friendship.
I discovered I was HIV positive. That should be like 10 years ago. It was a friend of mine. He went, had himself tested. So he came to me for like, I should just, you know, support him, be there for him. So I was like, okay, let me also go and test. Although I was not this kind of person that, you know, sleeps around. So, but I was like, okay, let me just go and do the test. So when I went, it was positive. I was like, no. It should be a mistake from somewhere. I went to another facility, did the test. It also came out positive. Fact that for 1 week, I didn't eat anything. I couldn't eat. You know, I was just thinking. My parents, they noticed that something was wrong with me because I was always quiet, you know. But, you know, I stayed in denial for like 4 or 5 years before I started taking my medication. So I was like, it was my friend, you know, I opened up to him. So he was like, don't worry, it's not a big deal, blah, blah, blah. He took me to a facility, registered me there, and then I started taking my medication up to date.
So we just heard from Joshua, and he was talking about this friendship he had towards the end of that clip around how by telling a friend about his HIV, it strengthened the sort of friendship that they had and also enabled Joshua to cope a bit better in terms of taking medication and stuff. And I'm going to ask Matilda first, is this something you commonly see among young people who do tell others about their HIV?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say, especially when it goes positively, mm-hmm. it's something that they can just share with someone. It's this a secret they've had for a long time that now things like taking their medication, they can go to a sleepover and take the medication in front of their friend. Or if they've got a doctor's appointment, they can say, actually, can I meet you a little bit later? Because I've just got to pop to have my blood cell at the hospital and then I can come. Or they can say, actually, I'm going to Cheever summer camp that week. Can we go out the following week? So all these little things that they've had to essentially hide or lie about, I guess you just become a lot lighter.
Yeah.
Because actually there's all these things that you can now be really open and honest about. And I think especially if you have got such a close friendship with someone and you have had to keep those sorts of things secret, it can be quite a relief, people say, that you can then, you know, not have to hide those things anymore. So yeah, and I'd say generally people do say it's a positive experience. And I was going to say before that specifically for me, maybe over the past like 8-10 years, in terms of attitudes, I would say have definitely changed in terms of I'm seeing more young people tell others about their HIV and have positive responses than before, where I think a lot more young people were like, no, I'm never, ever going to tell anyone, and perhaps didn't tell anyone until much older. But I'm definitely seeing a shift in younger people telling their friends about their HIV.
Yeah, and I think the point you made before, Matilda, about modelling is so important. It's like you kind of almost need to see something and hear something before you might believe that, you know, okay, maybe this is an option. Because when we're thinking about the family context, if a lot of the young people we work with are in families where they have been told you can't tell anyone, it's actually quite common that people have been told you can't tell your siblings, you can't tell your cousins, you can't tell grandma, you can't, you know, that can be really tough, and it can really start to impact on the natural development of relationships. Like you were saying, Matilda, you know, the worry about, well, what do I say when I'm going to camp? Or what do I say when I'm going to hospital? And these things can become really weighted as worries because, you know, somebody's feeling like they're not able to be fully truthful about their lives. And I've heard people describing very ingenious ways in which they hide their medicine or they take it and put it in
vitamin bottles
yeah. or like concealed little keyring fobs and things like that. So if you can then be in a space where you can hear somebody's story of like telling their friend, telling their partner, and that being a positive experience is so important. It's so reassuring to think, oh, okay, actually, maybe this will be okay.
I remember being asked by my friend, when are you going to die? And I was like, well, I mean, I'm not, because medication's like real good these days. And just also being able to be like, you know, and I'm undetectable and that means I'm untransmittable. It just adds that extra layer of like a shield almost. Like, even if some of the information the person you're telling still has, you know, misinformation, like, oh, you can catch HIV from kissing or sharing cutlery or whatever, whatever. You can be like, well, no, because you equals you.
Yeah.
And it's just very nice living in that sort of yeah. age of you equals you and having that as something you can hold on to.
Yeah.
Like a safety blanket.
Yeah.
At a recent Chiva workshop, we played all these clips to young people connected to the charity. And here to relay their thoughts and her own is Ruth Muko. Hi again, Ruth.
Hi.
First things first, what was the group's overall reactions to these clips?
So the reactions were quite mixed, especially when listening to Portia's clips. And I think it was very important to split the understanding of the romantic relationship versus the platonic relationship, which is where we had our split differences and experiences. And to explain, we found that the romantic relationships, the kind of fear of sharing your HIV with someone was very much deeper than mm-hmm. just sharing your HIV, and it was almost sharing your vulnerability and also sharing your romantic relationship with that person. And so the young people very much said that they had that fear that if this person that you're romantically with rejects you, it's more than just your HIV they're rejecting, but also you as a person. So I think that weighed quite heavy on a few of the young people that were talking. But then on the flip side, when talking about the platonic relationship, it was more positive, and it made the young people think about all the friends they have in their life that they want to share their HIV status with, and that they want to be open with more and almost grow their friendship with. But I think it leads to my first question that I will just point to Matilda first. Do you think it's easier to talk to a friend or a romantic partner about HIV?
Well, I think there's probably been more examples of where people have shared with me about their maybe more intimate sexual relationship that they need support with rather than a friendship. I think they share different challenges, but I think personally I probably hear more about the difficulties in more of an intimate sexual relationship sense.
What do you think the different challenges might be?
When we're looking at, let's say, an intimate relationship first, I guess there's the whole navigating of the relationship in itself. It's sort of meeting someone new, depending on what stage that you want to tell someone. You might have that at the back of your head before you want to have your first sexual encounter with this person. So you might be thinking, okay, do I want to tell them before or after? Or how's that reaction going to go? Are they going to think that I've put them at risk? So there's all those sorts of complicated factors. And then obviously you might want to continue that relationship and you might be really enjoying that relationship. You might be seeking more of a support. And I guess that could also work with the relationship, the first one I've talked about. But with a friendship, a more platonic sense, it might be that you're just sort of seeking the support, being able to talk to someone without the complexities, I guess, of the sort of the intimate part where they think that you might have put them at risk at some point if they don't really know the whole facts. They're two different ones. You can be wanting different things from both relationships. So that can be a bit tricky to navigate sometimes.
Yeah,
I do think that people are weighing up different considerations when they're thinking through a friendship sharing and a romantic partner sharing. And, you know, what was kind of lovely to hear from Portia was when she talked about telling Randy when they were in elementary school. Yeah. And it was like, oh, neither of us really know what it meant. And it's just like...
And cooties was worse.
And cooties are worse, yeah. Whatever cooties are. But when you hear stories like that, you just think, yes, this is what it should be. It should be like, oh, okay, well, what are we going to play today? You know, like it's literally just, oh, you shared that, right. Then you kind of got a really lovely foundation from which to... when you want to, as you get older, share a little bit more. Like maybe it's a time in your childhood where you really are a bit fed up with your meds and you might better say to your friend, these meds get to me, you know, it sucks that I take them every day and blah, blah, blah. You know, and there's a kind of little bit of then building of mutual support around growing up with HIV. But I think that idea of that being from quite little is a helpful way, I guess, of thinking about what would be ideal. The romantic relationship sharing, it's something that I think has got more layers to it, I guess. And it's because of the whole sort of prospect of it becoming a sexual relationship at some point. And that can be quite a worry for young people, for many young people. Unfortunately, I have, you know, on many occasions heard the experiences of young people who've avoided romantic relationships for that reason, because it just feels too heavy, too difficult to navigate. So it's easier sometimes to not, you know, not even enter into a romantic relationship. And that I think is really sad, and it's something that shouldn't be the case. You know, everyone should feel that they have a right to have an intimate relationship that they find nourishing and supportive.
It sort of brings us to that thing that Matilda was saying about, you know, that pool, just that tiny pond that you're keeping yourself in.
Yeah.
As a person living with HIV, I don't need to be in that pond. Mm. I can explore the whole world. And that comes from a lot of empowerment. And I think when we sort of talk about the difference between telling friends and telling someone more romantically, if you tell a friend, they can support you in a variety of ways. Even if it's just like, oh, I'm struggling with my meds, or, oh, I need to go to clinic, I need to do this, I need to do this. But also it gives you someone who, when romance does become more of a thing, to go, I want to tell this person about my HIV status. How do I go around that providing the friend is not living with HIV themselves, can give some further insight. And I think that is beneficial in a sense. Yeah. And, you know, reflecting on various parts of my life having HIV, I would always be more prone to tell romantic like partners opposed to telling friends. And it wasn't until I started telling friends that actually I felt more confident in telling romantic partners, because if it went wrong, I've got someone to go back to. I can, you know, have a cry, have a complain. And then if it went right, I've got a cheerleader in a sense. And I think it's very beneficial.
So one more question. A lot of our young people related to the experience of missing out on events like sleepovers or school residential trips. And their question was, what could make that experience easier?
Let's say in terms of like the school residentials, you know, Chief is doing a lot of work in terms of supporting schools to be better informed around HIV, to then be able to, you know, support students that they might have living with HIV, or in terms of a wider education perspective. Because I think some of the reasons that, you know, parents and families don't tell schools about the young person's HIV, which then makes them less likely to be able to go on to school trips and residentials, is because they fear the reaction. But I think when schools are better informed about how to handle that information, it then helps a parent or guardian feel safer to be able to tell the school that information and knowledge. And I guess similar in the sense of sleepovers, that's generally, you know, a parent or guardian's prerogative if they're allowed to go, if they, you know, give permission for them to go. But I guess it's feeling safe and comfortable enough to share their HIV, or empowering the young person to know what to do in terms of medications or what the parent might need to feel more confident in sending their child.
Yeah, and I think it's so important to really try and find ways to make this work, because it's not fair that children miss out. Yeah. And, you know, sleepovers to adults might sound like, you know, not very appealing. But for children, they can be so important as a way of, like, just having these great memories with your friends, and the stuff you get up to at sleepovers is, it's all about getting around those adult rules, isn't it? And not sleeping. It's not a sleepover because basically the aim is not to sleep. So they're really fun. And if everyone's going back to school on Monday and they've had this great sleepover on Saturday night and you're the one sitting there and you can go, you know, that's something actually for a young child or a teenager, that can be something that makes you feel really sad and different. And it's this experience of feeling different that we want to keep pushing back at. We want to keep trying to normalize childhood experiences growing up with HIV as much as we possibly can. So sometimes this is where the family work comes in. This is where it comes in helping families navigate this because of fear of other people knowing and not wanting to have to try and manage that. An easy response for families can simply be, well, you're not going to go on that school trip and you're not going to go to that sleepover because then I can manage it. And it feels safe for me because it feels like I've put a boundary around this and I feel like I'm in control of something that can cause me a lot of fear and worry. So let's lock that down. And it's about sort of trying to support families to think, well, okay, well, how could we still make this feel safe for you, but how could we also make sure that your child doesn't miss out on that really important field trip for the end of, I don't know, primary school or something like that? And there are often ways of making this feel okay, but it does come to support. I think Matilda's point about what we do with schools is so critical because it's absolutely imperative that schools have current, up-to-date, accurate information about HIV and they understand the confidentiality remits of their roles. And therefore, if a parent shares their child's HIV status with them, it should be of no concern to the parent what's going to happen to their information because it should be completely assured that it's kept confidential and their responses are appropriate. And then that child can go on their school trip. And we've seen that work. We've seen that work really well. And it's you know, it's totally achievable. But it's just about recognising that these things matter.
Thanks for listening to the Positive Advice podcast. I'm Eli Fitzgerald, and a big thanks to everyone who joined me in this episode, Matilda Brown and my regular podcast companions, Amanda Ely, CEO of Chiva, and Ruth Muko. In our final episode, we're looking to the future. Join us to discover what's in store. In the meantime, if you want to learn more about Chiva or if you want to access clips and updates from the Positively Spoken project, then head to chiva.org.uk and follow the links there. Positive Advice is a TBI media production for Chiva.